listening to the G-Ray Records Music Network. You enjoy...
Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a legal showdown that's not just about two music titans trading lyrical blows, but about the very definition of artistic expression in the digital age itself. It's a fascinating and, frankly, a bit wild situation.
It absolutely is. For this deep dive, we're zeroing in on Drake's defamation lawsuit against Universal Music Group, specifically centered around Kendrick Lamar's song, Not Like Us. But you're right, this is far more than just rap beef, as dramatic as that gets.
Right.
This case is raising some truly pivotal questions about how creative lyrics are interpreted in a court of law and the potential seismic impact that could have on free speech across the entire music industry.
And our mission today is to give you a true shortcut to being well informed on this. We'll dive into the latest court filings, some truly eye-opening skirmishes that unfolded during the discovery phase, and then kind of pull back to look at the broader cultural implications as seen through expert analyses. We've meticulously pulled from actual court documents, key legal commentaries from channels like Top Music Attorney and Rob Markman, and sharp insights from music business worldwide to bring you the full distilled picture.
We really tried to get the best sources together for you.
So let's set the stage, shall we? This whole thing kicked off when Drake filed his defamation lawsuit against Universal Music Group UMG back in January 2025.
Right.
This was, as you know, specifically in response to Kendrick Lamar's track, Not Like Us. Now, it's really crucial to note, this isn't against Kendrick Lamar directly.
No, that's key.
Drake is suing UMG, Kendrick's record label, which also, quite ironically, happens to be Drake's own label.
Yeah, the label situation adds a whole other layer, doesn't it? And Drake's claim is incredibly direct and, frankly, quite serious. He alleges that UMG decided to publish, promote, exploit, and monetize allegations that it understood were not only false, but dangerous.
Dangerous.
That's the word he uses. He argues this caused him irreparable harm to his reputation, especially considering how massive and widespread the song's reach became. I mean, even appearing in high-profile events like the Super Bowl halftime performance.
Wow. Okay, but UMG certainly isn't taking this sitting down, right?
Oh, absolutely not. In response, they immediately field a motion to dismiss, essentially asking the court to just throw the case out.
Yeah, and their reasoning?
Their core argument that the Not Like Us lyrics are mere hyperbole, you know, entirely typical of a rap battle. They even pointed out that Drake himself has a long history of participating in and, well, in their words, coaxing this very type of artistic expression.
So it's just rap.
Pretty much. This idea of hyperbole is actually a cornerstone of UMG's defense. And as we'll see, it's a concept that has much broader and critical implications for how rap music is viewed in a court of law.
Okay, that makes sense.
Now, what's fascinating here is the sheer amount of legal maneuvering happening behind the scenes, particularly in the discovery phase, that crucial period where both sides aggressively gather evidence, demanding documents and testimony to build their case.
Right, digging for dirt.
Well, maybe not dirt, but definitely evidence. It really transformed the courtroom into a high-stakes chess match.
And this phase has already proven incredibly expensive for Drake. Still, one of the latest updates reveal that he is hemorrhaging an incredible amount of money.
Yeah, that was striking.
We saw a truly staggering figure. His team spent $75,000 on a private investigator just trying to serve a key witness named Kojo Asamimoa after 11 failed attempts.
11 times?
Can you believe it? The judge eventually allowed what's called alternative service, meaning they could finally just mail it or post it on his door. That level of expense and difficulty really tells you how determined Drake's team is to get this witness to testify.
It certainly does. And this witness, Kojo Asamimoa, is relevant because Drake alleges he has direct knowledge of UMG boosting numbers and making Not Like Us appear more popular than it actually was.
Okay, so inflating the stats.
That's the allegation. It raises a significant question. Is UMG doing something specific and unusual with this song? Or is this standard industry practice for all their big artists across their roster, which could make Drake's claim potentially much larger?
Interesting. But then the legal chess match escalated dramatically, didn't it? Drake's team made a truly audacious move, going straight for the very top.
They really did. They sought to compel UMG to add their CEO, Sir Lucian Grange, as a document custodian.
Meaning
they wanted him personally responsible for identifying and producing relevant files and communications, claiming he was personally involved in approving Lamar's diss track.
Wow, the CEO himself. How'd that go down?
So Sir Lucian Grange's response to this was incredibly forceful. He filed a sworn declaration, pushing back hard. He didn't mince words, describing Drake's claims as farcical, groundless, and ridiculous.
Strong words.
Very. He states unequivocally that he had never heard the recording Not Like Us, nor ever saw the corresponding cover art or music video until after they were released.
And he really underscored why he wouldn't be involved in such granular details, right? Like the scale of his job.
Exactly. He highlights his role as the CEO of a multi-billion-dollar multinational corporation with over 100 record labels, issuing tens of thousands of releases each month.
Tens of thousands.
His focus, he argues, is on global strategy, not being in the weeds of specific song releases. It's a powerful argument about the scale of modern music operations.
Yeah, you can see his point there.
And stepping back, this case highlights how Grange also pointed out the no sense whatsoever of the allegation that he devalued Drake's brand. I mean, given that UMG has invested hundreds of millions of dollars in Drake.
Right, including buying his catalog.
Exactly, purchasing the bulk of his recording catalog and music publishing rights. From his perspective, these requests are a transparent attempt to waste his and UMG's time and resources.
To what end, though?
Well, he suggests it's either to gain media attention or maybe force some kind of commercial renegotiation or financial concessions. UMG's lawyers echoed this, calling Drake's premise of a secret conspiracy simply absurd.
Okay, so a lot happening at the executive level. But then, from the corporate boardrooms, the legal battle veered into some deeply personal and financially revealing territory, too.
It did. Drake's team also demanded an unredacted version of Kendrick Lamar's contract and extensive financial records.
Like what kind of records?
Things like Interscope CEO John Janik's compensation and Interscope's monthly revenues and profits. And perhaps most controversially, they even sought information about the paternity of Kendrick's kids and alleged domestic violence.
Whoa, that seems way off topic.
That's exactly what UMG lawyers called it, a fishing expedition.
How did UMG respond to those requests?
Well, UMG's counterargument was pretty unequivocal. They did produce a contract, but it was redacted.
Blacked out sections.
Right. They cited highly commercially sensitive information and ongoing competition between Drake and Lamar as reasons for the redactions. They called the financial and personal requests irrelevant, harassing, and based on manufactured speculation about interlabel competition.
Basically saying, you can't prove this is relevant.
Pretty much. They argued that Drake cannot explain why the rest of the contract is relevant. It really painted a picture of two titans fighting tooth and nail, not just over a song, but over the very information that could shape their future dealings.
So with all this intense legal maneuvering, what does this all mean for the broader music world? I heard this case has sparked a much wider conversation.
It really has, especially with a compelling amicus brief filed by a group of scholars from the University of California.
Okay, explain an amicus brief again. Friend of the court?
Exactly, a friend of the court brief. These experts aren't taking sides, but they're offering crucial, impartial perspective to the judge on the underlying legal and cultural issues.
And these aren't just any scholars, right?
No, these particular scholars are nationally recognized experts on the use of rap lyrics in court. We're talking criminologists and scholars of criminal justice, freedom of expression, intellectual property, the whole gamut.
So what's their main point?
The core of their argument is truly critical. Drake's defamation claim rests on the assumption that every word of Not Like Us should be taken literally as a factual representation.
Every single word.
That's the implication. And the experts assert that this assumption is not just faulty, it's dangerous.
Dangerous? How so?
Well, they really dig into why it's dangerous. They argue that treating rap lyrics as literal opens the door to racial bias and stereotype in the courtroom, something empirical studies have apparently shown.
Okay.
It also fundamentally threatens First Amendment speech protections and has already created a demonstrable chilling effect across the industry.
A chilling effect? Mm-hmm. Like artists being afraid to say certain things.
Exactly. It makes you pause, doesn't it? If every lyric could be dissected for literal truth in court, What happens to the sheer joy, the provocative energy, even the satire that's so central to rap music?
Yeah, it changes things.
Indeed. And they highlight that this same discussion frequently comes up in criminal trials, where prosecutors often use lyrics to try and prove someone committed a crime.
Right, I've heard about that.
This connects directly to legislative efforts like the Restoring Artistic Protection, or RIP Act, which was recently reintroduced. The goal there is to change rules of evidence in federal courtrooms, basically making lyrics inadmissible unless they are a literal admission of a crime.
So the experts are saying a literal interpretation just doesn't work for rap.
Pretty much. They point to two key elements that make it fail. First, it's all about stage names and public personas.
Like alter egos.
Exactly. Rap artists routinely create fictionalized characters, right? Think of Marshall Mathers as Eminem or Jeffrey Williams as Young Thug. These hyper-masculine, street-hardened personas are often crafted for commercial success and rarely represent real-life identities.
That makes sense.
They even cite 50 Cent's explanation of his song High All the Time. He openly admitted he didn't actually drink or use drugs himself, but included that content because he saw other artists selling well with it.
So keeping it real doesn't mean factual reporting.
Not necessarily in that literal sense, no. And second, there's braggadocio, hyperbole, and competitive wordplay.
The boasting and trash talk.
Precisely. These are among rap's most defining artistic practices, especially in battles and diss tracks. Exaggeration, lyrical cleverness, and creative insults take precedence over literal truth. Diss tracks, by their very nature, are often vicious, graphic, and hitting below the belt with accusations of misconduct.
It's part of the art form.
It's about the art of the verbal spar, not a sworn affidavit.
And this isn't new, right? It has deep roots.
Incredibly deep. The experts argue battle rap isn't a corruption of the art form, but rather a modern incarnation of long-held oral competitive and communal traditions seen throughout the African-American experience.
Like, who started out that way?
Well, artists like Jay-Z, DMX, Eminem, they all got their start there. It has evolved from spontaneous freestyling to more composed diss tracks, with artists like Elia Banks, Eve, Foxy Brown, Lil' Kim, even threatening physical harm in their lyrics, all seen as part of this established tradition.
Okay, so there's history and convention here.
Absolutely. And the experts also emphasize the crucial role of the audience. Diss tracks presume the listener possesses prior knowledge of the rap music predominant artists and their histories and rivalries.
You need the backstory.
You do. Rappers understand that victory depends not on factual accuracy, but on the salience of their metaphors and images, as well as on the audience's ability to make these context-dependent connections. In short, there's a deep layer of shared understanding and context involved that goes far beyond a simple literal reading.
Which brings us back to the potential consequences if Drake wins this.
Exactly. That leads us to the truly massive potential ramifications for the entire industry. If Drake were to win this lawsuit, music distributors like UMG could be held liable for defamatory lyrics.
So labels would have to police lyrics much more closely.
Potentially, yes. This could lead to a significant chilling effect on what has been a commonplace and vital part of rap culture for a very long time, possibly leading to widespread censorship.
Wow.
This raises fundamental questions about protecting free expression and avoiding racial bias in the law, especially when, you know, some critics themselves point to Drake's own past lyrics against Kendrick and ask if those should be taken literally as well.
That's a fair point. Okay, we've just navigated a truly complex legal landscape today, from detailed court filings and millions spent on private investigators to the very nature of artistic expression in a genre steeped in hyperbole and persona.
Yeah, it's a lot.
This case is clearly far more than just a celebrity feud. It's like a crucible for the future of rap music and, by extension, creative freedom in the digital age.
Stepping back, this case forces all of us to consider the often blurry line between art and alleged fact. What's truly fascinating here is how the legal system is grappling with cultural forms that have their own established conventions of truth and performance.
Like two different languages almost.
It really is. It's a clash of two very different worlds attempting to understand each other.
And this raises an important question for you listening. If the law demands a purely literal interpretation of artistic expression, especially in a genre like rap where hyperbole and persona are so central, what does this mean for any artist creating work that challenges, provokes, or even just entertains with creative exaggeration?
That's the big question.
How might this case shape the boundaries of free speech and creativity in the digital age, long after the legal battles themselves have finally concluded? Something to think about.
Hi, this is Naomi, a spokesperson for the G-Ray Records Music Network. Big thanks to everyone for tuning in and listening to G-Ray Records, your place for music plus more. May peace be with you. Enjoy the music.